This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. This is our Sondheim adjacent episode for the month. The lovely people who support me over on Patreon, we grew the Patreon to such a degree that each month we do a bonus episode here on the last day. So this is, of course, July 31st, so therefore I get to do something that is sort of Sondheim related, but maybe a little bit left of center. We're not going too far afield because the person I'm talking with today, Rob Berman, can be seen right now conducting at the St. James Theater for the revival of Into the Woods. So I'm really excited to share this conversation. We have a really fun chat. If you want to help continue to support Patreon and get us to our next level, you can do so by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. But without further ado, let's just jump into the episode. Rob Berman, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
I feel you have had such an extensive career that it's kind of hard to know exactly where to start, but I guess I'll take a cue from The Sound of Music and we'll start at the beginning, which is was there ever like an album or a moment that you can remember in your life that's like, oh, this changes everything?
That's a good question. You know, I am the youngest of three boys and my oldest brother, who's 6 years older than me, used to be in the musicals, in the school musicals. And I think probably it was when he was in a production of Oliver, and he was probably in the eighth grade or something, and I was just a little kid, and I remember going to see it, and I was just, something hooked me very early on into musical theater, and just watching my brother perform in these musicals really kind of got me interested. And then I started playing the piano when I was about six, gravitated to just checking out from the library all the Rodgers and Hammerstein songbook, all the Broadway songbooks, and, you know, started just playing all that stuff on the piano and then performing in musicals in school growing up myself. And interestingly, it wasn't a lot of listening to cast recordings. I mean, we had some at home.
Okay.
You know, I'm old enough that it was when I was a little kid, it was still, you know, LPs. And my parents had a box of LPs that had My Fair Lady and different things. But I didn't listen to a lot of the cast recordings till I was a little older in high school and college. But it was more my playing things on the piano that really kind of where I learned a lot of the classic Broadway repertoire. And interestingly, it did not include Sondheim. Sondheim for me, I did not really get interested in Sondheim's work and really learn about it really till college, I would say. Not even in high school. In high school, I remember a friend of mine who was another theater kid. You know, one day she was like, oh, this was when Sunday in the Park had just maybe come out. I was in high school, and she brought in the vocal selections songbook one day. She said, listen, you gotta sit down and play this with me. You're going to love it. And I remember sitting there playing through Sunday in the Park, and for, you know, just where I was at that time in my life, in my musical life, and my taste, and my, you know, I remember thinking, God, this is pretty weird. This stuff's so really out there. And I just didn't really get it. And then I went to Yale and met people like Joel Fram, who I know you've spoken to as well, and just sort of learned all about Sondheim's shows and then grew to just love them and appreciate them so much, you know. So I did not grow up, you know, listening to
I think that's such an interesting way into it. I mean, before I forget, I do like how it is essentially been phrased here. Like, I experimented with Sondheim in college. Like, everyone does.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
But I think it's such an interesting way to come into it where it's like, no, it was really just the playing of the scores themselves with like the whole history of musical theater. I don't want to get too precious with this, but I'm also, do you think it's when you are playing it, like you're actually engaging with the text rather than just being a listener to it? Is that like a for you, like a conversation with them? Like how, what is it like to like, yeah, open up a new Rodgers and Hammerstein score and be like, okay, I'm just going to plunk away at this?
Yeah, I think I was just so curious as to what it all sounded like. You know, what is it? What do these songs sound like? And I was a good, always was a good sight reader at the piano, and always, you know, but there, I remember there were times where I would play things on the piano and then eventually I would hear them recorded or a performance or something. And I think, oh, you know, that's how that, you know, maybe I had an idea about a tempo or something, but, or a feeling of a song. Yeah. I mean, I still have in storage somewhere, just boxes of these books I had as a kid, the, you know, the greatest hits of Broadway and sort of thing. And I didn't even know, I would just see these songs and these titles of shows, and I didn't always even know what the shows were about or really much context for how they fit into the history of Broadway at the time, you know. So, so I just finished 15 years as music director of Encores at City Center. And most of my career, you know, I have done more revivals than new musicals. And so, you know, I have become someone who just knows a lot about the history of musical theater.
I think that's such a special place to be in. We can kind of that conduit between like the old and like doing it for like a modern audience. I have a few songbooks myself here in my collection, and I always find it so interesting to jump into it because whether it's Sondheim or not, there's so many examples of songs that are like, when you, again, just listen to them, sound fairly simple. But when you see them written out, it's like, actually, there's some actually some complex stuff that goes on here to make it sound so simple. So I always like when you can break it down even to that level of like, yeah, our job here as musicians and as performers is to make this look like it's just been dashed off when it's been anything but.
Well, I think Into the Woods, you know, like a lot of Sondheim's work is a good example of where some of these melodies are very, I mean, he wrote even the title song Into the Woods written to sound like a nursery rhyme, you know, da 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 da. It sounds like a nursery rhyme kind of a melody that you would learn. And then, of course, you know, Steve wrote these crazy dissonant harmonies under it, and you know, sort of what he does underneath that, which gets so interesting.
Now, was it always going to be a career in like, you know, music directing, conducting, that sort of thing, or was there ever a time like, no, I want to be a performer, or I want to be something different?
So when I went to college, I thought maybe I wanted to be a performer. And then I got to Yale and there were a lot of really talented performers there. And I immediately, like freshman year, I looked around and I was like, okay, I'm not going to be a performer. Like I'm not as good as these other kids. And so, I mean, I sang all through college. I studied voice and I sang in a cappella and I did all that stuff. But in terms of being an actor and a musical theater performer. So then I immediately kind of pivoted in college and decided, you know what, I'm going to be a music director because I played piano. And so, interesting story is that my sophomore year, there was the big undergraduate production was going to be Sweeney Todd, and they hired a professional conductor to come in and conduct. But the show ran for like, I don't know, 2 weeks, and there was one performance he had a conflict with. And so they were going to choose an undergrad to conduct one performance, Sweeney Todd, with the full orchestra, the full thing.
Wow.
And so at the end of my freshman year, I think I auditioned and I met with him and he chose me. So I always like to say the first musical I ever conducted was Sweeney Todd, which, you know, is sort of like being thrown into the deep end, right?
Yeah. 100%.
And I have very little memory of the performance. I know it began and it ended. I can tell you that. And
just flop sweating the entire time. Yeah.
And I think, and interestingly, to this day, I've never conducted Sweeney Todd again, as much as I would love to someday. Just the opportunity has not.
Well, I hope that that happens for you. Is that being the show that we just finished talking about on the show? Like, it's just like talk about like this links to that, which links to this, and like these lyrics over here. It's very complex.
It is, and when someone the other day just said, "Well, what is your favorite Sondheim show?" You know, and I said, well, you know, if I had to say, if you're going to make me say, then I would say Sweeney Todd.
So yeah, that's your, I guess, your progression here then. As you had mentioned here already, weren't really like, say, like listening or even playing around with Sondheim as you were growing up. What, when was your first like kind of lock-in moment of a Sondheim show?
Well, I mean, probably this Sweeney Todd in at college, that where I really, I remember listening to it for the first time and being kind of like, kind of overwhelmed by it, you know? And at the time, I think not even fully understanding it yet. And but I think the process of learning that show and is what really kind of opened up. And at the time, you have to, so I was in college 88 to 92, right? And my generation of theater kids, we just worship Sondheim. I mean, there was such a devoted kind of admiration for his work in my generation, and particularly at Yale at that time. It's all we, anyone wanted to do, you know. So I just kind of got, you know, I just learned all this stuff from these other musical theater kids, and there was a there were classes. I mean, I took a class on Sondheim, and yeah, I think. And then this, and then Into the Woods was done while I was at Yale, but I was not.
I was going to say, like, the timelines here, like the original Into the Woods would have debuted fairly soon around there.
We were one of the first, probably one of the first college productions. I'm sure right around that time, people started doing it everywhere. I did not work on that at Yale other than my dear friend, David Gursky, who is actually now in the orchestra of the Broadway run we're doing right now. He conducted that production. And I remember one day he was down a rehearsal pianist and just called me, and I came over and like tried to sight read through the score Into the Woods for a rehearsal. And, you know, again, it's sort of, I don't remember vividly, but I know I remember doing, I mean, at the time too, that's before he even wrote Passion. I mean, that's, you know,
yeah, I know we're still
right around Assassins, I guess he was writing at that time. So, anyhow,
did you see any of those on Broadway at all?
No, I didn't. You know, interestingly, again, my growing up, my family, like, we never came to New York to go see shows. So, but, and then when I got to college, I started seeing some shows in New York. I did not see the original Assassins or the, what was referred to at the time as Teeny Todd that was playing.
Right.
And then, what else? But I did go see Passion. Passion, I think, was probably, I saw in previews, and that was probably the first. Is that, let me think. Yeah, it's probably definitely the first Sondheim musical I saw on Broadway, for sure. Yeah.
Right. Like, for you, as you're coming out of college and everything, are you, do you have a clear idea of what your career trajectory is? Like, did you know what your next steps were?
I did. I came out of college and had worked in a couple of summer stock during college. I had worked in some summer stock jobs. One was at the Candlewood Playhouse, which at the time was a very large, like 6 month, seven show kind of Connecticut near New York City. They had a lot of people come up, and Josh Rosenblum was the music director, and he also is now in my at Into the Woods. You see, I'm very loyal to people I've known for a very long time, and Josh hired me. I was probably between junior and senior year. So when I moved to New York after I graduated from college, Josh was very helpful, and I met a lot of people. But I did come to New York wanting to become a music director for musical theater. Yes, I did. That was my plan.
Okay.
Started working.
I just imagine you have suitcase in hand. You're looking up at the big bright lights. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember. Yeah. I mean, I still remember the day, you know, I arrived with, yeah, like two big duffel bags, and, you know, just so funny. That was 30 years ago now. So anyway, started, yeah, just playing piano for anything that could come along I could find. And just one thing led to another over time. And I subbed on some Broadway shows, and then got some jobs as an associate on some Broadway shows. And I did a little bit of touring, and just kind of got in there and met people and started working.
Yeah. You know, it's like Joel himself also started like playing piano and stuff like that in rehearsal rooms, from what I remember him talking about. I don't want to say improper expectations, because there is, I know a bunch of students and young people, young composers and stuff like that, that listen to this show. If this was the direction that they wanted to move in, is that a good career choice? Like, should they be trying to get into those rooms and being like the accompanist piano, or is there a better way, do you think, nowadays, if this is what they're their journey
is? I think a lot of things have changed since I kind of broke in. But I think that has not changed. I mean, you know, in other words, there's still, if you want to be a music director on Broadway, you know, yeah, you kind of start with playing. I mean, there are people who have been able to do it who are not piano players, but far more difficult
right.
if you're not a piano player. That's just the truth. So, yeah, you start by subbing on shows, playing keyboards, playing rehearsals, playing auditions, you know, until you just, it's just about people getting to know you exist and know you're good. And then, you know, things can fall into place from there. But I think that basic idea has not really changed at all.
I was looking at a list of your productions here, and we're not going to go through every single one of these. I feel like it would be almost come across as like a list of side effects if I started to list every single thing you've been a part of. But like the very first one that I can see that comes up is State Fair from 1996 as an associate conductor. So I guess I should ask, just for clarification, is that the first show you were a part of?
That is the first show that played on Broadway that I was an associate conductor and had my own chair. And therefore the first time I ever conducted on Broadway. So I conducted, I mean, the show only ran for 3 months and I probably conducted 20, 25 performances or something during that run. But yes, that would have been the first time I conducted on Broadway. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And was that thrilling, scary, exciting?
Yes. All of the above. Yes. It was thrilling and exciting. But just to make the connection, you know, who was in State Fair was Ben Wright, the original Jack from Into the Woods, who...
There you go. Yeah.
After he played Jack, he kind of decided, I think he didn't want to continue in theater and show business. But then he was talked back into coming back to doing this show, State Fair, you know, which was the first was stage adaptation of that Rodgers and Hammerstein film.
Right.
He and I were very friendly at that time, and he's a great, great guy, and he was terrific in the show. And then after that, he really did retreat, and now he's been living with his family down in North Carolina for all these years.
Yeah.
I hear from him every now and again. But
that's cool.
But State Fair, yeah, that was very exciting for me. That was really an exciting time for me.
Which theater was that at?
The Music Box.
One of the next big ones that comes out, just because of the Sondheim connection that we have here, is, I guess this must be a regional or touring production of Sunday in the Park with George in 2002.
That was the Kennedy Center Sondheim celebration. You remember when they did that's 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
Six shows, Sondheim shows in rep. So they did.
That's right. Yeah.
Three and three. They're the first half of the summer. It was Company, Sweeney, and Sunday in rep. And then the second half, it was Night Music, Passion, and Merrily. That was an interesting story. Kay Cameron, who was at the time the head of musical theater, music director of musical theater at the Kennedy Center, she called me. Basically, they had someone else was going to conduct Sunday in the Park, and then that person had to bow out. Like, this is 2 weeks before rehearsals started. She said, can you come do this? And, you know, I was 32 at the time, which was at this point, I think, God, I was so young. And, you know, and so that was a really big deal for me because, first of all, I didn't know the show that well. I mean, I didn't know it's inside and out. So I had to really learn it fast.
That's right. Because the first time you would sight read, it was like, pass. This is not for me.
So,
right.
So, yes. Yeah, so how funny is that? So I learned it very fast and then went down there. And just that summer was one of the just highlights of my career, my life. I mean, it was just so fun. The people involved, all the people down there doing the shows. It was the most, I mean, I subsequently worked with Steve Sondheim a number of times, but that summer was the time I got most sort of just downtime with him and just like sitting at the bar and going to have a meal or him just coming into my dressing room and chit-chatting with me. Like that was a very exciting and magical time. And that production was Melissa Errico and Raul Esparza, and they were both fantastic and
phenomenal.
I
think that's such a cool memory to have, you know, just having been in the downtime Getting to know the actual person. From stories that I've read and other people I've talked to, very open for collaboration and stuff like that, and people interpreting his works in new ways, that sort of thing. But like, do you feel like he taught you anything, whether it was that time or at any point in your career?
My goodness, yes. I mean, of course. I mean, he, you know, I remember in Sunday in the Park, him coming in, I remember thinking, gosh, if he had ever wanted to be a director, he would have been a great director. Because, I mean, obviously he's, when he wrote, everything he wrote was with such strong intention. And he thought through everything from a dramatic and an actor's point of view. So he kind of has done all the homework for you. There are times, yes, while he, on one hand, was very open to different productions and interpretations of his work, you know, when it came down to the text and the lyric and what his intention was, he's very specific.
Right.
And quite, I mean, not demanding, but he, I remember in Sunday in the Park, he came in and we had some rehearsals with him and he was just like, no, this is what this means. You know, he says, you know, when he says at the end of that whole piece, when he says red and starts painting at the end of Color and Light, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, it's not that George is like, should I go out or should I stay in paint? Oh, I've decided consciously that I'm going to stay in paint. He said, that's not what it is. It's, he has no choice. He's compelled. When he says red and starts painting at the end, he has forgotten about Dot. He is obsessed, right? And so it's not that he has sort of made this decision. It's more like, you know, he's just, he looks at the painting and is just drawn back into that world. And
right.
So, it's, I mean, just things like that, where the importance of the last, at the end of Act One, the last thing he does is take the glasses off of the little girl, and that's the detail. That the last thing he does is a detail like that. So just over the years, and you know, we'll get into it, I'm sure, but at Into the Woods this time, without him around, which has been so strange, I try to imagine, like, well, if Steve were here, what would he think is important here? Or, and I can kind of hear him, and I don't ever presume that I speak for him, but I sort of, there have been times where I can hear him saying, make sure she stresses this word, you know, this is the word that's important here. You know, like I trying to honor that and hear what he might be saying, because I never really did get a chance to speak to him about Into the Woods, about this piece. And I had a lot of questions for him that I never got to ask him. But anyhow, yes. I mean, I say that often that he, I think at the end of the day, while he was such an accomplished composer and a musician, I think he cared more about the words at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. That's what he cared about the most. And only to say that he, for him, music was a way of telling stories, and the stories, in the drama, and the, you know, that's what he cared about, you know, the play of it,
yeah.
and the characters and all of that. So, you know, I don't believe he ever wrote any purely instrumental works. You know what I mean? Am I wrong about that?
There's a couple.
Oh, yes, he did. Right. He did some film, right? He scored a film.
Yeah, some film stuff here and there, but like very minimal, yeah. Very minimal stuff.
Well, so I take that back. However, the point still remains that, you know, the storytelling is what he cared about the most.
So you have to tell me about this off-Broadway from 2007, Stairway to Paradise, because I don't know what Stairway to Paradise is.
Oh, okay. So that was a production at Encores at City Center. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, just the real brief history is, Rob Fisher was the founding music director of Encores starting in 1994. Around 2002, I started working there as an associate to Rob on some of the productions. And for people who don't know, Encores is three productions a year, concert stagings of you know, old and generally underproduced musicals. Rob stepped down in 2005. Paul Gemignani came on as music director. And then I was hired to do musical arrangements and musical continuity for this thing called Stairway to Paradise, which was basically a musical review of material from Broadway musical reviews over
the Oh, interesting. Year. Okay.
So it's all material that came out of, you know, Ziegfeld Follies and all the different reviews that were very common on Broadway starting in the 20s, 30s, 40s, up through the 50s. They sort of by the 60s, they weren't as common. But so, you know, Irving Berlin and Harold Rome mm-hmm. and all these great show composers wrote, you know, all these great songs for these reviews, right? That, and so Jack Viertel was his idea. He was the artistic director of Encores at the time. He put this whole idea together. Jerry Zaks was the director.
I'll build a stairway to paradise with a new step every day. I'm going to get there at any price. Stand aside, I'm on my way.
So what happened was I was going to just be doing all the arrangements, and Jonathan Tunick orchestrated the whole thing. And then it turns out at the end of the day that Jack asked me then to also conduct and music direct the show, which I did. And then it was after that production that I was offered the job to become the music director of Encores, which then I did for the next 15 years.
15 years, yeah.
That show had Kristen Chenoweth and Christopher Fitzgerald and Kevin Chamberlain as sort of the lead players. And it was great. It was a great show.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, you hear the name Irving Berlin, at least I did, I guess, when I got into musical theater and through even like just the history of the United States because of his like military contributions and stuff like that for music. But I don't know, I've developed a deep love of a lot of Irving Berlin's music here over the last few years. I know Sondheim actually quite liked Irving Berlin's stuff. He talks about it in his books a few times, so... Yeah, I've been starting to listen to him more and more, interestingly enough, in the last couple of years.
Irving Berlin was amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. You know, and I did a musical called White Christmas, which was a stage version of his movie. And so that was all Irving Berlin music. Mm-hmm. And I grew even more appreciation for his work.
So over that 15 years, are there certain productions that are like, oh my gosh, like this one stands out or this other one here stands out? Like, what are some of the highlights for you?
Oh, certainly. So there, yes. I mean, I think one of the shows at Encores that I did that was the very top of the list was Anyone Can Whistle, which we did in 2010.
Okay, yeah.
We did it in 2010. It was Raul Esparza and Sutton Foster and Donna Murphy. So already, you know, what a cast. And then Casey Nicholaw was the director. And I think very smartly, I think that was a great choice because that show, you could get too bogged down in that script, right? And try to, and it's more like we had David Ives do a concert adaptation. So he, you know, a lot of it was sort of cut, edited down like we generally do at Encores. And then Casey just made it a fun night, kept it moving. You know, he didn't leave the audience. He didn't let the audience have a minute to sort of go, wait, what is this about? You know, so, but what a, it's an incredible score. The orchestrations are wonderful. The cast was great. That was a really exciting Encores. The only show probably in my whole time that generated more excitement was Into the Woods this year. But Their Most Happy Fella was one of my favorites. We did that with, I mean, part of what Encores provides is, you know, we did that with an orchestra of 38 and a cast of 37. I mean, where else, you know, Laura Benanti and Schuller Hensley and, you know, where else can you do it at that scale as it, you know, should be performed with that kind of talent? And so I often say that I was a very lucky person to have that job because if you're someone who like me who likes to conduct old musicals, there was not a better job because just having that Encores orchestra.
And that's the big thing too with a lot of these older shows, which is some of them very well might have like a cast recording and stuff, and that's fine. But I think theater really, this is so dumb to say, but theater is meant to be seen, right? You should be seeing the actual production, how it goes together and that sort of thing. So being allowed to have at least some semblance of that so people can understand, like, oh, I get how this show kind of worked
and what
it appears like.
I think that has always been the gift of Encores for theater aficionados, is to come and finally go, oh, okay, that's what this show is, for better or for worse. I mean, one of my favorites we did was Pipe Dream, which was a very famous Rodgers and Hammerstein flop.
Right.
Maybe their biggest flop. And I happen to think there's five or six beautiful songs in it. And I really sort of pushed for us to do it because I said, well, let's just do this show. Because you can learn, you know, when you see a show by the great writers that doesn't succeed, you kind of go, it makes you appreciate even more their great work. But mm-hmm. I thought it was fascinating. It's not a good show, but I think it was worth doing. I think it was worthy of for us to produce. And it was actually quite a nice production directed by Mark Bruni, who made sense of a lot of things that never made sense before. So I think it was as good a production as you'll ever see of that show. But, you know, warts and all, right? We just presented it.
There's just something that tickles me a little bit, like the service that this provides of the encore season of these potentially almost forgotten or little done shows having their time in the sun again. There's no Broadway producer who's going to be like, here's a few $1 million to produce Little Me. You're like, no one's going to do that, right? As a huge Broadway house.
Although Little Me was revived in the early 80s, kind of flopped, and then I worked on the Roundabout production with Martin Short late 90s. But that's, Roundabout is a bit of a different structure and financial model than like a commercial Broadway producer would do. But you're absolutely right. And which is to say also, today especially, revivals on Broadway are risky business. You have to either have Hugh Jackman in your show or have some kind of special buzz like I think we have right now with Into the Woods, but mm-hmm. revivals, I think we're going to see fewer and fewer revivals, I think.
Do you have a sense of why that is? Is it just like the changing appetites of the audiences or?
Yeah, it could be. Just Broadway's so expensive now, all the way around, every aspect of it, that producers are going to be less willing to, I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I mean, there are a bunch of revivals coming up I know about. So I don't know. I think the days of revivals, I think if a revival runs for a year, that's pretty good, now. Mm-hmm. Chicago obviously is this crazy.
Right. shattered records and stuff.
When Chicago transferred to Broadway, there were musicians who were trying to decide whether to take the gig because they thought, we'll get a few months out of this, maybe, mm-hmm. At best. And now here we are, 26 years later or whatever, 25.
The last show I just want to touch on, because I have this weird affection for this show, even though I recognize a lot of the flaws of this show, which is Bright Star.
Oh.
I really do like the music a lot, actually, in Bright Star.
I've seen a strong man cry. I have learned the brightest day can turn into the darkest night. Bright star, keep shining for me. Shine on and see me through. Bright star, keep shining for me. And one day I'll shine for you.
Bright Star was a good 4 or 5 years of my life and really one of the greatest professional experiences I've had. I mean, it was a joy to work on that piece and that music and to work with Steve Martin and Edie Brickell mm-hmm. and Walter Bobby. And I deeply loved that show. And mm-hmm. we had a great time doing it. And, it's one of the most licensed shows.
I've heard this.
High schools and whatever. So, people are doing it everywhere, which is very nice. And I'm actually have continued to work with Edie on some other things she's developing. So objectively, I also know that it's not a perfect show, but emotionally, and subjectively, I love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I music, I do listen to it actually quite a bit in rotation for myself, but I think it's part because I do like Edie Brickell a lot. And I've been a Steve Martin, super fan for most of my life, and that's the type of nerd that I am. I've heard that it's been licensed to go in schools. I think honestly your biggest mistake was deciding to open it up in the same season as Hamilton. I mean, that was just poor planning.
Yes that was unfortunate. Anyone trying to compete with Hamilton, I know, but the nice thing is we were nominated for Best Musical. I think Carmen was incredible, and If it had not been the same season as Cynthia Erivo, Carmen might have a Tony on her table.
Yeah. So to round things off here, of course, Into the Woods is currently on Broadway as we're talking here. They just transferred actually over into there. How often does that happen in your experience of a production transferring over to a Broadway run?
People think that Encore's, you know, that Encore City Center is always trying to get things moved to Broadway. And that's really not the case. I mean, there have been in whatever, 27 years, you know, maybe four or five productions that transferred. What is unusual about this situation was how immediate and fast it was. I mean, in the past, we did Finian's Rainbow, and that transferred to Broadway, but that was like 6 months later, it opened on Broadway. This right. was, honestly, this was like 4 weeks later, we were open. I mean, Juju Amson, Jordan Roth, Nicole Castrinos, you know, they saw our production, and they came and they said they just want to take exactly what we did at City Center in the exact same presentation and just put it right in the St. James. And that's basically what happened, with a little, you know, we shined it up a little bit here and there, but basic, and we had to recast a number of roles from
sure.
But basically what we're doing there every night is a, like an Encore's production. And I think that what's making it so successful and popular in the audience, it's like a Sondheim rock concert every night. I mean, it's screened for it. There's a lot of nostalgia about this show, and a lot of people know it well because they were probably in it or saw it in high school, or there's been a movie. I mean, people, you know, now we're how many years, 20, 35 years later, almost 40 years, you know, this show has sort of has the feeling now of being kind of a real American classic. And
right.
And I think what this production does is it puts Steve's work front and center. It puts Steve and James's work front and center. It puts the text, the music, the lyrics. The show is the star of the show, is what I have been saying about this. And we happen to also have this phenomenal cast who deliver it so freshly and satisfyingly. And so, and we're also basically doing the original version of the show. We haven't messed with the text. We haven't messed right. with the score. We're playing the original orchestration. You know what I mean? So I think all those things are in what everyone's been through the last few years, and the fact that Steve died recently, you know, I mean, I think all of these things just kind of aligned, and people are responding to this in a way that in an extreme way, I will add, that none of us expected.
Yeah, I think at least in a Broadway context, it's almost, from the reports I've read and the friends I've talked to, it's almost this, you're being allowed to grieve in a public space, whether that's because of Sondheim passing away, because of the last 2.5 years through shutdowns and lockdowns and all that kind of stuff. It's just this chance of like, hey, things were bad, and now hopefully things can get better. Like, if there's just this allowance, like, hey, and we're all here together to share in that in a communal way, which is what great theater is allowing people to do.
Yeah. It's true. And, you know, actually, the day Sondheim passed away, the day they announced it, that afternoon, my husband and I, at that moment, decided to buy tickets to Company for that night. So we went to Company that night, and that was the night that Marianne, the director, spoke.
Right.
You know, and all of that. And just to be in the room with all those people and hearing his music and his words that night, you know, everyone was in shock, you know?
Yeah.
And I still, to this day, still kind of can't quite believe that he's gone.
Yeah, I have the hardest time flipping into a past tense all of the time.
Yeah, I know. So, but I think that's a part of what's going on as well with our show. Mm-hmm.
So you have, of course, made the decision here to, you know, step away, try different things. Is there something on the near horizon for you as far as like work goes? Or are you retiring? Is this your retirement?
No. I mean, people think I'm retiring from show business. That's not the case. I just stepped down from Encore. So, and here I am now conducting Into the Woods on Broadway. So that was a nice little bonus round from my last show there. Yeah, you know, at this point, I just want to pursue things that are interesting to me, that are musically interesting to me, you know, and also where I feel like I can really have a creative contribution. You know, I'm open to sort of seeing where that leads me. But as far as Encores, you know, it just, I think the time was right for me to move on to a new chapter. And But I will be back there in the audience, I'm sure, as a supportive audience member. And possibly, you know, there's a tradition where former music directors come back to conduct some shows. You know, so maybe I'll be back there at some point.
people can obviously catch you conducting in the Into the Woods transfer that's on Broadway currently. Is there any other way if people wanted to see what you're doing or keep up tabs with what you're doing?
You know, it's funny. Like, I don't have a website. I'm always like, yeah, I should have a website, but I don't have a website. But no, I mean, I think I'm not a big one into sort of self-promotion, but
yeah. Well, thanks, Rob.
Hey, my pleasure. I'm going to dig in now and start listening to some more episodes of your podcast.
Yeah.
So now that I
do it, there's quite a few. We're about to start Merrily We Roll along here very soon. So yeah, I mean,
going chronologically.
Yeah, going chronologically.
All right. Well, when you get back to Into the Woods, if you want me to come on and talk about that some more, let me know.
Okay. Perfect. That sounds great.
You're going chronological. Well, I guess that'll be the next one then after.
No, Sunday first.
Merrily.
Yeah, Merrily Sunday. Into the Woods.
Merrily, yeah. I did Merrily at Encores. I've done all his 80s shows, really, at this point now. And then I've done Passion twice. I've never done Company or Follies. So, but great. Well, good luck with it. Merrily, boy, that'll keep you busy. There's a lot to talk about.
So Sweeney Todd took me about 6 months. It was like just over the 6 month mark. Right. And I think Merrily's going to be roughly the same with the revisions and different songs and different versions and stuff. I think it's going to take me about that long to go through. So
a lot to talk about there. Yeah.
All right. Perfect. Thanks, Rob.
All right. You got it. Have a great day.